This palace has been the traditional seat of the Dalai Lamas until the Chinese occupation of Tibet in the early 1950s, and it still is a major goal of pilgrimage in the Tibetan tradition and truly an impressive monument. The first Dalai Lama to become enmeshed in international politics was the 13th Dalai Lama, who lived from 1876 to 1935. He tried to isolate Tibet from what was then known as the Great Game, the political struggle that took place between Russia and Britain for influence in Central Asia. The British, even though we often imagine them as being enormously powerful in India, felt often that their control of India was tenuous and might easily slip away, and they were very much concerned about being undermined by the expansion of Russian influence in Central Asia. So they sent messages in the early part of the 20th century up to Tibet, trying to find some way to enlist Tibetan support or at least to ensure Tibetan neutrality in this tug of war between the Russians and the British. Tibetans, as you might imagine, weren't particularly interested in answering their mail because they didn't want to get drawn into this political struggle between the Russians and the British. So the British, to try to get a response, sent a military expedition up to Lhasa, through Sikkim and up through the great fortress in Gyantse and eventually into Lhasa. It was led by a Colonel Younghusband, and it's referred to often as the Younghusband Expedition. It was a subject of an awful lot of romantic speculation, as you can imagine, in the British press at the time, because they felt that they were really opening up a very mysterious part of the world. In some ways, as those early travelers and early explorers said, the last undiscovered and unexplored area of the world, at least from the European point of view, that they represented. The Dalai Lama fled when the Younghusband Expedition came in, but the British forced a settlement with the representatives of the Dalai Lama who were still present. And from that time through the 20th century until the coming of the Chinese in the 50s, the British kept a diplomatic mission in Tibet that served at least in part as one of the as a means of communication between the Tibetans and the outside world, and provided for us as scholars of Tibet an early and important glimpse of what was going on in Tibetan society in that time. Now, the weight of international responsibility and the real difficulty of trying to work through conflict with great powers fell most heavily not on the 13th Dalai Lama, but on the 14th Dalai Lama, the one who is alive today and is the symbol of Tibetan Buddhism for many. His name, the name of the 14th Dalai Lama, is Tenzin Gyatso, and he was born in 1935 in Amdo in northern Tibet, a region that was under the control of the Chinese. The story of the discovery of the Dalai Lama is one that's reasonably well known. It's told in the Dalai Lama's autobiography, and it's one that's well worth retelling. It tells something about his personality and something about the function of traditional Tibetan society. When the previous Dalai Lama died, the reins of power were handed over in Tibet to a regent, and the regent became responsible for setting in motion a process that would find a successor to the previous Dalai Lama. And he, being a practitioner and a monk, went down to a lake in southern Tibet and meditated until he had a vision of a place that might be likely as a possible site for the rebirth of this great figure. It turned out it was a small village with a farmhouse in a barren site in northern Tibet with particular characteristics. And he sent a group of monks up into this region to look for a likely child. They visited the farmhouse of the young boy who became the 14th Dalai Lama, disguised